What do you want?
To find a cure for the Drak plague.
Where are you going?
Anywhere I have to.
Who do you serve? And who do you trust?
If it's not eating us, what's it doing?
No, it's not.
It's mating with us?
Well, it's not exactly the first contact situation that I'd envisioned, but...
I want it off my ship.
I want you to know that this thing just made a very large dent in my ship. Did you ever think about looking outside before you start throwing things overboard?
Who do you serve? And who do you trust?
I don't know.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we will be reviewing an episode of the 1990s TV classic Babylon 5 spin-off series, Crusade. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
This week, episode 2, The Needs of Earth. And the synopsis. The crew rescue an individual whom the Rangers claim possesses all the important information of his race on 6 data crystals. Written by JMS and directed by Jerry, Apoian.
Ah, oh, Jerry.
Good old Jerry. Jezza to his mates. This episode was released on August the 25th, 1999, and takes place in April 2267. And our guest stars, Tony Amendola as Natchok Var. What an actor.
Master Braytek.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And plays a character in Starfield as well, which I didn't know.
Oh, yes. Yes, I forgot. Yeah, he's in there for a bit. Ah, yeah.
I'll have to find him.
Hammond of Texas. Oh, I love him. I love Braytek. He's wonderful in Stargate. And in this, absolutely loved him. I figure he is on par for me with Andreas Katsoulis. Like, as soon as I see him while playing, I'll just zone in on him. Forget all the other actors in the scene. He's the one to go for.
We'll come back to this later. But if I didn't know that he was in this, if I hadn't read his name, I would never have known he was in it.
It was only his voice. From looking through.
Yeah, he has so much prosthetic on him, which is a shame because he's got a really good distinctive face, and I think they could have put a little less on just to sort of, you know, do a Martin Sheen, you know, that sort of thing.
Careful what you wish for, I suppose. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true. anyway, Bill Mundy plays Nix. Mark Hendrickson plays Patron. Peter Welkin plays Trulan, and Tom Weiner plays A Priori Flentak. Uncredited, in fact, is Maggie Egan, Jane, the ISN anchor. Good to see her making a bit of a show in Crusade. Hmm. So, Sean, what do we think of this episode? Sean has frozen. I thought he was just sitting very, very still, but no, he's gone.
Yeah, I thought he was. He's out. He's gone.
That's what he thought of it. I'm out of here.
He's done with the Crusade. One episode and done again. Oh, he's back.
He's back. He's back. There he is.
Hey.
I thought you guys had froze, but no, apparently my internet went out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I looked around and thought, oh, you know, Sean's sitting there waiting for me to get to him, so I'll go to you. And I looked at you and I thought, no, he's frozen. He's certainly sat still. I thought you were listening intently, but no. So I just got to the point where I said, Sean, what did you think of this episode?
Oh, wow, that's a very good question, Paul. What did I think of this episode? I'm looking at my notes, and I remember I took notes for the first half of the episode, and then there wasn't really anything to take notes for the second half. And I kind of don't remember it other than the space porn. So as we talk about it, I guess I'll have more thoughts about it. I know that somebody was on Praxis 9, and Praxis was a moon in Star Trek 6, and there was music in it and poetry and stuff. Cool. I don't know. I don't remember it. It's very forgettable, apparently. So what did you guys think?
Anatomically, I don't think it's possible to get away with that porn, but hey, there we go. I must have watched some episodes of Crusade, because that scene where he's sat there going through the data crystal and they turn their heads in the sort of comedy moment, which plays out through the episode, which was a nice little touch, that was in my memory. And I was like, well, what show is that? I can never remember what show it was. Turns out it was Crusade. So I must have seen this episode at some point. I just don't remember anything about Crusade. Yeah, maybe that's a portent of things to come. Ooh. Yeah, this episode, like Sean was saying, is a really good concept. It goes really, really well. And then when that part of the story's done, and then we're doing like the last 10 minutes of the characters talking about what just happened in the episode, yeah, it just falls flat. It just sort of stops. It kind of did what you were talking about, Paul, in the last episode. It has this great episode, leads right up to it, and then about 30 minutes, it just says, right, we're not having any of that. We're just going to stick and talk to some characters on the ship and watch the captain go to three different characters to talk about what happened. And Daniel Day-Kim is just going to talk to himself. He didn't even have anyone to play off in that last little scene where he has a little monologue to himself. Yeah, it kind of falls short, but I really enjoyed the story, the thing that actually happened. It put me in mind of a lot of TOS elements, you know, when the Excalibur is sitting there in hyperspace and they get surrounded by all the ships, all at different angles. You know, I was kind of expecting the 60s, da, 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 and they're going to get chased by the photon torpedoes. And, you know, the uniforms look a little bit hokey. They kind of like a little bit of Never Give Up, Never Surrender from Galaxy Quest, mixed in with a bit of what is now Star Trek Discovery, because it's all gray and red and it's really strange. So it kind of felt like it wanted to be the 60s, but it wasn't. And it's very strange. And yeah, I was invested more in this episode. If this had been the pilot, I think I would have given the first season a bit of a go, as opposed to last week. But yeah, it's still not good. There's still something missing. So yeah, that's my thoughts on so far.
Yeah, that's right. The uniforms do change. They start with one and finish with another. So this is going to look a bit bizarre because we're watching this out of order. It's going to go all over the place. So you'll be in, out, shaking it all about, as we saw in the alien porn. So yeah, alien porn. And like you say, the brilliant comic moment where they all lean to one side to look at it and see whether can you do that way?
Is that our new sign off? You know when the listeners don't know that, yes, we do the little wave from Veer to each other when we sign off our episodes when we're done for the evening? Are we all just going to turn our heads to the side?
Because we're now in Crusade, I think we have to do that. Yeah.
Or both. Nobody's ever seeing it. We just do it to ourselves. No one ever knows we do.
That's
it.
Right. That's right. Everybody knows the Pac-Moron doesn't even have that kind of an atom.
Yeah. And just wait till the Centauri enter the room.
Oh, God, yeah.
They've got a hand in everything. I say hand. But yes, anyway, let's get into the review. Captain Gideon is watching some alien porn in his office when Dr. Chambers enters. She's quite surprised and she asks him where he got it from. He says that Mr. Eilerson didn't have time to print up his latest report, so he gave it to him on a data crystal. However, he forgot to switch it off at the end of the report and found this. There's Snow White and the Seven Narns. Who's your little Pac-Mara?
The titles were awesome. That was the best part of the whole show.
They should have kept going. I'm sure there was more in there.
That must have been the best day in the writer's office, where they were just coming up with porn names based on everything they've done for the last 5 years. Just throwing it at the wall, see what stuck.
There's another one, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Let's get the wall, see if it sticks. He must have recorded over an old data crystal without wiping it first.
And you're going to pull this out the very next time he gets snotty with us, aren't you?
No, that'd be far too easy. Leave it to me, Dr. Chambers. Given someone as repressed as our Mr. Eilerson, I can play this one out for days.
As a doctor, I have to say that's totally unrealistic. An alien life form like the Pac-Mara is not biologically equipped to interface with humans in that kind of...
It's an amazing thing, technology.
They get a visit from Anlashok Trulan. He has brought information about their latest mission. The Alliance and the Rangers exist to create the peace. The information he has would require them to violate those laws. The question is how far the captain is prepared to go. But with 10 billion lives to consider, he will go as far as he needs to. Once the information has been given to the captain, the Adlan Chok will disavow any knowledge of his conversation, and then he will self-destruct in 30 seconds.
And those laws aren't the only thing that's going to get violated, if you know what I mean.
Just because you got halfway through the episode and then rewound it back to the alien space porn.
You weren't supposed to tell anybody.
So Sean does, of course, his other podcast, the Soul Forge podcast, with his soon-to-be wife, Leah. And the latest episode was about their first fight. And I'm thinking, was it really about a car, or was it actually about she caught him watching this space porn?
I'm sure she would watch it with me, so it must have been about the car.
Oh, yeah. And then she'd be looking at it going, no, I don't think you can get to that position. Anyway, where was I? Mr. Eilerson would like his data crystal back, as it may be corrupted, and he wouldn't want the captain to open up a corrupted file. It may lead to all manner of problems. The captain, however, is too busy to do it right now, as he has a meeting to get to. They have just received some promising information about a certain individual called Nat Chuck Farr of Mirada 7. Mirada 7? Did we say Mirada 7 or was it Parada 7? I can't remember now.
I think it started with an M.
Okay.
I wrote it down as Marani ships. So.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Mirada 7.
I don't know. I couldn't really understand.
Yeah. It was the seventh one of whatever system it's in. Anyway, according to the reports, he downloaded all of the knowledge of his race and left the planet. They think he might be selling the information to the highest bidder. They don't know what the information is, but it covers centuries, and it would be good to too good an opportunity to pass up to get their hands on it. Unfortunately, he's been caught by bounty hunters, so the Excalibur will go in and spring him out before he gets back home. If this goes wrong and one of them gets captured, then they are on their own. Eilerson objects to the plan, but then he spots the captain has his data crystal in his hand. When the captain asks him if he has any more thoughts on morality, he says he does not. They arrive at the planetary system which contains Nat Chuck Farr, and identify a domed city on one of the planets which has the only spaceport, so he must be down there. The problem is that with it being a busy spaceport, they will know who the Excalibur is, and if they tried to do something illegal, they could lock it down and stop it from leaving. The captain says he will have to be dropped off away from the spaceport, and he will make his own way in. Jurina says she is coming with him, as she knows the place inside out, and where the target may be. Jurina is looking at the map of a planet quizzically. Captain asks if there is something she ought to tell him before they go down, and she says, no, not really. They are dropped off on a dusty red planet wearing suits that make it look as though they should be on Mars. They are about 6 miles from the city. The last time Jurina tried this, she got as far as this, but her four colleagues were killed. They managed to find a door, and Jurina manages to remember the six codes that open the door. This is awful. She needs to take her gloves off, and in doing so, the toxic air will get into her helmet. She manages to get the code correct at the last minute, and they dive through the door. They enter a cantina full of aliens and a band playing some random music in the background. When the captain says, interesting collection of people, Jurina says, you will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. She sees an auction for slaves taking place and stops talking and rubs her wrists. The captain interrupts her and she says she needs a distraction. So the captain creates one. He walks up to the biggest alien he can find and starts a fight with him. Whilst Jurina uncovers a symbol, last seen in A Call to Arms, which attracts a fellow thief, just as the captain is thrown through a glass wall in front of her. The new thief shows them the way to go. When they get to the cells, there are a group of aliens having a drink and playing cards, blocking their way. The captain distracts them by playing Eilerson's pawn crystal. The captain finds Nat Chuck Farr, but Jurina only goes and blows the bloody doors off the cell, holding the group of slaves as a distraction. They manage to escape and call the Excalibur. Gideon asks Jurina why she blew the bloody doors off the cell, as slavery is illegal in this sector. She says that she was in there waiting and praying for help, and no one did it for her. Just then, Matheson calls and says that a jump point has formed and a warship is on its way through. They get back to the ship and drop Natchuk Var off with the Doctor. On the bridge, they jump, but...
The Marathi vessel is accelerating, moving to intercept. Jump engines are online.
Jump. Any sign of pursuit?
Negative. Looks like we've gotten by... Stand by.
Don't say stand by when we're one word away from good news.
We're picking up a distortion field.
One word away from good news. The warship is following. In the sickbay, Natchuk Var is being examined by Dr. Chambers. The doctor wants to take a look at his chest, but he has a box that he is clutching to his chest so tight and he won't let it go. He will only give it to somebody who deserves to have it, and not the highest bidder, as the doctor has been told. When he finds the right person, he will give it to them freely. The warship fires a warning shot, as they want to send somebody to talk to the captain to resolve this peacefully. The captain agrees to it. The shuttle docks with the Excalibur, and two aliens come aboard. When they enter the meeting room, one introduces A Priori Flentak, the first counsellor, minister of justice, etc., etc. But the captain gets it. The other person is Nix. Why can't the other guy have an easier name to pronounce? And he's the translator. The captain tells Nix to tell his boss that he is an ass.
Like others of his station, A Priori Flentek does not speak the words of other races for reasons of morality and intellectual purity.
Really? Tell your boss he's an ass.
I told him you are honored and deeply humbled to have a being of such high moral character aboard your ship.
Do you do this a lot? Lie to protect his ego?
All the time. It's politics and self-preservation.
Understood.
Yeah, I remember this part. That was a good scene.
Yeah, it was a good scene. Whole, yeah.
The Weasley translator guy and the stoic guy who doesn't speak English.
Exactly. And I love the way that he says, tell him he's an ass. And he says something, obviously, in the alien language. And then he says, did you tell him he's an ass? He says, no, I want to live. Yeah, he says, okay, yeah, fair point.
Politics.
So, which is true. I mean, I'm sure most, you know, negotiators and interpreters will not say exactly what is being said in case, you know, they will put it nicely and politely. And yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. Nix says that they are the recognized authority in this system, and the person who is aboard could cause great difficulty in the hands of the wrong people, and they must hand him back over to them. The captain asks, what if he says no? They say that they will not allow him to leave this area alive, and if that means killing him and his crew, then so be it. The captain says he would be willing to take that chance in a fair fight. Nix says they don't have a fair fight in mind, as the captain is urgently called to the bridge. There are three more ships taking up firing positions. The two guests are put in the brig, as the captain does not think the enemy will fire upon them with their own people on board the Excalibur. They still don't know what the information is that Natchuk Var has, and whether it is relevant to the virus. Eilerson makes a good point.
Look. Do what you will, but I did not sign on to die for something like this. We have to put the needs of Earth first. Our mission is to find a cure for the Drak plague, not give shelter to every refugee that we come across. Now, we can either save him, or we can keep trying to save the 10 billion people back home. Do the math, Captain.
In sickbay, I started off being able to say this word, and now I can't.
Just say Mr. Var.
In sickbay, Tony Amendola is listening to some data crystals. He stumbles upon some rights-free music, classical music by Mozart, and listens to that for what seems to be an hour or so. He is then disturbed by the captain, who explains the situation to him. Amendola says he is willing to return to the planet, as if he stays, he may die, and if the enemy ships open fire. The captain says he would like to make that decision, as he is the one who has rescued him. Mr. Var says he will return, but before he does, the captain needs to copy the files he has on his very poorly made, multicolored, mother-of-pearl data crystal. Matheson takes Nix and a priori Flentek to the flight deck and says that Mr. Varr will join them shortly. Nix says that the minister does not want to sit next to a criminal. None of their crew do, so they will return to the ship and send out a remote vessel to pick him up and take him back. Matheson says, yes, I'm sure you will. And you think, so he sussed him there. They're obviously going to blow up the ship, at least the shuttle. So Matheson's got it. Great. He'll save him in some way.
Yeah.
The first shuttle returns back to the ship, and when the second shuttle leaves Excalibur, Gideon says, this is all too easy, and would like to speak to Mr. Varr. Matheson tells him that there is nobody aboard the ship except for him, as it is a remote-controlled ship. But before Gideon can send out a fighter escort, the shuttle is destroyed by the warship. The remaining ships then jump through the jump gate. So I'm thinking, oh, great, he's got him off. He's not really on the ship. You know, he managed to squirrel him away. The captain asks Dr. Chambers what was on the data crystal that was worth dying for. The doctor says, what was on the crystals was poetry, songs, stories, going back centuries. There's also a personal log from Natchok Varr, saying that the government is burning the books, taking down the statues, and getting rid of the art. They have erased all of the art from the planet's databases and private collections, except for the one that he has. He hopes that one day he can reload it, but there is nothing scientifically useful. But that is not the point.
Advanced cultures sooner or later figure out that hydrogen is the most common element in the universe. They have different names for it, but it's the same thing. Science is a universal constant. It's there for anyone to discover as long as you can do the math. But you don't just discover Ode on a Grecian urn or Beethoven or Gauguin. When the last copy is burned, it's gone forever.
He threw away his life. Sarah, he said that it contained all the important knowledge of his race.
It's a question of what you think is important.
Eilerson said it himself. We have to be focused on the needs of Earth.
And this does. Don't you understand? I've listened to it. The stories, the music, they're all about hope. Hope enough to inspire a dozen generations.
It's what Earth needs.
We talk about the needs of Earth. Well, there's more to it than the obvious. While we're waiting on science to discover the math that will lead to a cure, we need something to sustain us. This is the music and the literature of hope. That's what we need. Another culture forgot that. We can't. Not now. Not ever.
So, yeah, Mr. Varr was killed in the shuttle. That's poor captaining.
Right.
And poor first officering.
It was lazy writing, too.
Yeah, if that had been Star Trek or even Babylon 5, you know, Garibaldi or Riker or somebody would have thought of some way of, you know, squirreling them off and you know, getting them out of the way, putting a dummy in there or something, like they did in the Rangers. The Rangers, yeah, where they blew up the ship because they threw in a load of hand grenades.
They tricked them.
Yeah. Oh, this is poor, Captain. Very poor. The captain says he will plot the next stop. The Rangers say they have a lead on an alien medical research vessel spotted nearby.
First officer's personal journal. Continued.
Recording.
Back when I was a kid in Sunday school, Father Minkowski once said, given that crucifixion was a terrible thing for anyone to endure, if you could go back in time 2,200 years, would you prevent the crucifixion of Christ? After a heated debate, we all agreed the answer was no.
He thought that Natchok Varr would get a fair trial.
The crucifixion was necessary to redeem the world. When they said that Natchok was going to get a fair trial, even though I was deliberately trying not to scan them telepathically, I could sense they were lying. But I didn't go deeper. I just assumed that it meant that he would get a mock trial. I didn't even suspect the truth until I saw Natchok. He knew.
by dying, he saved part of his world.
He knew. By dying, he saved a part of his world. And maybe even a part of Earth. If I would have said anything, I would have guaranteed that his dream died with him. So I did nothing, as he would have wanted. Nothing to save the souls of billions.
He was not protecting his own ass.
I choose to believe I withheld that information from my captain for lofty reasons. And not because I was afraid that by revealing what I knew, I was violating the new rules for telepaths. Because it was right. Not because I was protecting my own ass. But I guess I'll never know. How odd to know everyone's heart but my own.
The captain stops by sickbay to see if he can listen to some of the music left behind. The doctor gives him a copy of what she was just listening to. He apologizes for being short with her and says the reason they picked him for the job is that he has a thing about death. He has seen too much of it in his time. She asks if this is because of what happened on the Cerberus. He says he was just an ensign back then and there was nothing he could do. But 347 officers and crew died, and many of them were his friends. She says it was just an accident, and because of that, he takes death personally. He says he does not take it personally, and it wasn't, he obviously means, an accident. He stops by Jarena's quarters and gives her the data crystal with the music on, and she reveals that her parents sold her to slavery to pay off their debts.
But you know what you won't have to pay off? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Tune in to the Dragon Con Report podcast, your ultimate destination for all things Dragon Con.
Join us each month as we dive into our home away from home and cover the world of con fandom, cosplay, gaming, and more.
With guests each show, behind-the-scenes insights, tips and tricks, and the latest updates on this year's convention.
Whether you're a seasoned attendee or a first-time explorer,
the Dragon Con Report is your passport to the ultimate geek experience.
Join us and let your inner dragon roar.
So, on to the trivia. Okay, there isn't any. Sean.
No trivia
no
again.
No trivia again.
Wow.
Nobody's bothered watching these. I think these are two of the later episodes. So you think maybe they got to this and nobody's actually watching it now. So there's just like, can't be bothered with putting trivia into that.
Sounds about right.
So Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
As a matter of fact, there are. We've got your good friend Tony Amendola, who played Nachak Var. He was in the Voyager episode Muse as chorus number 3. Mm-hmm. We've got Bill Mundy, who played Nix. He was in the Deep Space Nine episode Armageddon Game as Jakin or Jakim. And Tom Weiner, who played a priori Flentek, he did the voice in Star Trek Judgment Rites and Star Trek the 25th Anniversary video games.
Hmm. Yeah, it's good. He played Harry Mudd in the anniversary video game, in fact.
No, I didn't check that part.
Okay, on to the ratings. We are going to give this 5 crusade points. And we're going to but IMDb give it 10 crusade points. So let's see what they gave it. They gave it a 7.2, which is slightly lower.
Well, that's lower than they gave last episode.
Yeah, they gave it less than last week.
Yeah.
But it's better than last week's by a couple points.
Yeah,
by a far.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, Sean, what would you give it then?
Well, now that we've run it down and you've explained the plot to me, I do remember it a little bit better because I did watch it 2 days ago and I watched Racing the Night before it. So, like I said, I didn't take too many notes. The alien species was kind of fun. The going down on the planet and having to do the rescue, that was over too fast. It wasn't, this whole series so far, it needs to have more. There's always something missing to it, like an extra scene or a longer sequence or something. I'm not quite sure what it is. Like There's just always something missing, but it's okay. The space porn came back so many times. That was a nice callback. So that's always fun. Making the doctor squirm. That's always not the doctor, but the archaeologist guy, Eilerson. We don't like him. He's a douche, but, you know, it was a better episode. Much better. I don't know. I'm going to give it a 2.75.
Ooh. Okay. I think we'll go higher than that. Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, again, it's something missing. It's not quite there. But if I were to compare this to Babylon 5 episodes, I can think of a lot worse Babylon 5 episodes. So I think I enjoyed this a lot more, certainly more than last week's. So I'm really confused by the IMDb rating, to be fair. I'd like how it is less, but it's still there. Yeah, we had the whole main crux of the episode with the character who's the rebel somehow downloads an entire world's database into just 6 crystals. That's a pretty good storage system. I want that one. There's a genuine story there. You know, they rescue this guy. They want the knowledge. You know, they're doing it for maybe the wrong reasons, because they want their own self-interest, because they want the medical research of their people, only to find out it's the art, the history, it's hope, which is a really Star Trek-y kind of thing. So I really appreciate the episode for having that kind of nice, optimistic view of things. You know, the art is the important just as much as surviving, and living is also the aim of the day. And there were those sort of 60s TOS elements of being surrounded by the ships, and it was kind of fun, and the captain was being a good captain until he wasn't, until he got the guy killed by not checking up and maybe thinking about and doing something, or doing something cool or smart. You know, maybe keep that character, keep Narchok around so that he goes off and maybe he's like an informant or something in the future for future seasons. So there was things missing and things that just didn't quite click. And then once all that was over, like the recap says, he goes around talking to all the characters and spends 10 minutes on that. And it just slows it right down. So it can't be a perfect episode. It's nowhere near a 4. I'm probably going to go 3.5 on this.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. What you've summed it up really well there. That last 10 minutes was ridiculous. We got to the end, the guy had died. It wasn't quite obvious that he died, so it left you guessing for a little bit, and then you think, oh no, he actually has died. And then you get the first officer saying, oh, I didn't know they were going to do that. You know, I thought he was just being a little bit, you know, he knew he was going to die, and you know, I thought he was just, you know, doing something. I can't remember what it was, but and this really is the first time I realized that he's a telepath. I think it was, so how didn't you why couldn't you pick up on the fact that the other two guys were lying through their teeth, and you would have been able to know what they were doing? I mean, okay, it might be a violation of some sort of code or something, but if you've got a suspicion that there's going to be a crime committed or a death is about to happen, maybe you could, you know, you can justify that. And then Goes gives the data crystal to Jurina. Well, was that really necessary? A bit padding a bit out there, which meant that the rest, like Sean said, the rescue mission was compressed into such a small space that it was hardly worth putting in. Here we are, we're 6 miles out. Oh yeah, last time I came down here, I got this far, but my colleagues were killed. Next scene, they're at the door. 6 miles like that. It wasn't even like an ad break. It was just like just a cut. Doom, we're there. Yeah, and then
exactly my point.
And then I get the it was a nice little idea of I can remember the codes. Oh, like you've been, how long was it the last time you came? It was obviously a while. She was tied up and she was put as a hostage down here. She was she was going to be sold for slavery. How does she know the door codes? Secondly, wouldn't they have changed those door codes by now? I mean, even we're told to change our passwords on our computers at work every month, or 2 weeks or 3 weeks in some cases. So the same codes, really. It could be any one of these 6. Oh, well done. They've actually got 6 different codes. They rotate. Yeah. Must be a Wednesday. Let's use this one. Bit of jeopardy in getting in. Fine. There could have been more in that cantina. There could have been a bit more, you know, lightsaber cutting somebody's arm off or something, anything, just to, you know, the fight I thought was a good idea, but you know, he turns out to pick on a guy who's like 2 foot taller than him. He goes, oh great, I picked the big guy. And then he ends up getting thrown through a window, which, you know, as a distraction, it was good. And then I did like his distraction of putting the porn on so that he gets all of the people who are sat in front of the cells out the way.
Which is I thought they were going to come back to. I thought the way they were going to get around it is that they'll kill him, but the way they'll get around it is that they will send a broadcast of all the pornography. One, to embarrass Professor Max, but also, like, it's got an embedded signal of all of their art, so it plays back to their home world. So they all click the file to go and watch the alien porn, but they're actually getting all of their artwork sent back to them. And that was that they were going to turn him into a martyr, but in a kind of funny way. Yeah. But they didn't. And, just crazy.
Yeah, it was very odd. I mean, it was just, but like I say, very odd. But there was a story there. There was a rescue mission. They get the people out. And Jirina releases a few people out of there, which has no consequences. It was good. And there's a bit of backstory, and obviously we find a bit out about Jirina. We find a bit out, but so far we've only seen two episodes, and there seems to be a theme here already. You get a in some cases, a long intro to get to the plot, and then you get 20 minutes in the middle of a very compressed story, which then ends, and then you get 10 minutes of backstory for the characters. And if this is going to carry on like this, then I'm not too sure I like the way this is going. But it was a lot better than last week's episode. I'm going to give this a 3.25. What did you say yours was, Dan? I've forgotten to write it down.
3.5.
Actually, I didn't give it as much as you, Dan. I thought I was going to go higher than you, but no, that's what it is.
I think this might be the highest score I ever give, if this is the indication of what the rest of the season is. If this is the end of the season and it's supposed to be at the beginning and it's only this good and it gets worse, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear.
I've had a glimpse into the future because I'm a couple of episodes ahead of you guys. So that's not a bad one coming up soon at some point in the future.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
It's not a bad one.
Not a bad one.
But there's a reason it only got 13 episodes.
Yeah.
You can see why. Yeah. If they make a very quick decision, these aren't the first episodes, obviously. I mean, these are episodes, what did we say they were, Sean?
9 and 11. We're watching number 11 right now.
Yeah, 9 and 11. So if we're saying that these are not good at 9 and 11, then you can see why it isn't going to get another season. But they may have made this decision before then.
Well, yeah, because the way they normally do it is they'll produce the 13 episodes and then you get an order for the back 9 or the back 13 back in the day. Now it's all like 8 or 10 episodes because it's streaming. But back then, that's how they did it.
Yeah. But I can see, I mean, I get the feeling that maybe they knew about this already, because there doesn't, we were saying about there's something missing in these shows. We don't know what it is. And I've just had a thought now. It feels as though the actors are just going through the motions. There's no heart in it.
That's, I think you're right, because it's like it's empty air.
Yeah.
They're just pushing the words around is what they're doing.
That's right.
Like Babylon 5, you felt it. They inhabited their characters. But yes. These people, we're acting.
Yes. And yes, it is. There is that I think is what is missing is the I get the feeling they may have already known that this was going to be not going very far. And that they'd lost interest in it, but maybe I'm being a bit cruel. But there are some good performances in it.
And there's some good ideas. Like it's a great story. Like we're trying to save Earth, and we're going on a crusade to find the cure, and we're gonna do some fun stuff along the way. But it's just so boring.
Yeah, I mean it's like Babylon 5. Meets Star Trek in that respect. They've now, instead of being based on a space station, and they've done Deep Space Nine now, or Deep Space Nine has done Babylon 5. We move on to a ship that can move around and meet new aliens and move around a bit more like Star Trek, which at that time would have been in the middle of DS9 and moving on to Voyager. So, It's a shame. I think if you did it now, there might be. I think it could be done better. And who knows if it will be. So, anyway, I think that's the end of this episode. Join us again next week, where we'll be discussing episode 3, The Memory of War.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.